Hello and welcome to the Ireland on the Fly podcast about the people and places of fly fishing in Ireland. This week we speak to Nicholas Grubb, who grew up in South Tipperary beside the Shure and the Tar, and he tells us about the incredible catches of fish that were to be had growing up. It's a throwback to another age, and his great-grandfather Samuel also had a reported 62-pounder, which would have been an Irish record, but it was never measured or verified at the time. Nicholas also wrote an article for Salmon Watch Ireland back in 2022 discussing some of the reasons why he thinks salmon numbers have plummeted since the 1960s, and he goes into detail with us on them. Some are controversial, some are interesting and thought-provoking. But first, Tom, aside from the salmon, we got out for our first Ireland on the Fly outing last Friday to try our hand at early season buzzer tactics. It didn't go too well, unfortunately.
Yeah, come on, Dara. Yeah, no, it didn't. Wasn't the most successful day we've had out, but at least we got out. We weren't.
That was my first outing in the year.
Yeah. Oh God, yeah, it was actually. Yeah. So at least we got out, and you know, wasn't one of the cancellations, of which I've had half a dozen of already this year. But look, what caught us was duck fly was virtually finished, and we struggled, you know, from that day to find any fresh duck fly hatching. And that's, you know, that's a bit of a drawback. You need good hatches going on. You saw what happened. Like, it could still happen near the end of the evening. We ditched the buzzer tactics and switched to dries. There was a bit of activity then with egg layers going back on. And that, I suppose, in your memory, when I'm looking back at old times, I mean, that would have been a lot of the duck fly fishing we got years ago as well. You'd have gone out in the evening,
right?
Maybe the small wets or dries, as the egg layers were going back. But because the nature of the egg layers, they're coming from the trees. So they're not passing up through the water. They're landing on the top of the water. So your buzzer fishing can really, if there's not fly hatching, as there wasn't, it can really turn off. It can go off. But we did have a very good lunch.
We did. Good man, Mike. Those are venison burgers.
Yes, absolutely fantastic. And the hut on the island was great.
Yeah, it felt like the sun was shining. I know it was a bit of cold, and there was showers, but yeah, it just felt like kind of, yeah, it's okay, I'm out, it's starting, let's go kind of thing. There's a couple of things for me from the buzzer fishing I liked was there's very much kind of the stalking element. You know, we were driving around, and now obviously the flat cam in the morning, as you said, didn't help. You know, we saw fish coming up, and we just, as soon as you went near them, they were gone.
They do that.
So the stalking element, I have to say, I really, really enjoyed. Yeah. And then the other thing I got from as well was just how patchy and localized, and it can just turn off and on like that, you know.
Well, going back to what, I mean, Mike said that in the masterclass, he touched about how local, that's one place where local knowledge can help you, and knowing where the duck fly holes are and finding them, because they are very specific.
Yeah.
Really specific, you know.
I remember you pointing out to me one of the drifts we were doing, and it was near the end of the day, and you were showing me, like, from here to, you know, the island, you know, 100, 200 meters, you were saying that's the mayfly drift.
That's the mayfly
drift. And a quarter of that would be the duck
fly. If even, you know?
Yeah.
It was just, you know, you'd go that distance to the duck fly, but yeah, for the mayfly, you'd go right out to the yonder.
Yeah.
The blue yonder.
Yeah. So
yeah, no. At least we had a bit of action, did get a fish and lost another one on the dry. So, you know,
what was it? Nice pound and a half, was it?
Yeah, one of the dries there, and nice hit it on another one.
Yeah.
But that, if you remember, that lasted about 20 minutes.
Yeah.
That was it. You know, they came up, they went on them, and that was it.
And so that was last Friday, and we were thinking probably, is the duck fly gone? Is it still around?
It still is around. Like, we fished a competition over the weekend, and there were still places where the duck fly was hatching on the lake. And the lads, the two young lads from Kong, Mark Gibbons and Barry Malloy, they went over to the east side of the lake and found places where there was duck fly hatching. So, you know, that's the way it can go. And one of the boats actually went down the lake the other day and found, you know, you'll still find them. And look, they're during this week when I thought it was all over. Jason, who's been on the show with us, Jason O'Riordan and Dave came up, Dave Burke. Thought it was going to be straw. I thought there was going to be no duck fly. And we found one hole down at the end of the peninsula here where the duck fly were hatching. And that was after we tried mask in the morning and came back because it was dead loss. So we only got in the afternoon and picked up a couple of nice fish. So Jason got a load of cracking fish. He was 48 centimeters.
Lovely.
And then Dave got a fish, and I sent you the picture. I'm nearly certain it's probably, my own record, it's probably the fourth ever sea trout that I've had in the boat. in all the years I've been fishing in Cork.
And it was a cracking fish as well.
Yeah, it was a lovely fish. It was 44 centimetres.
Yeah, I'll put it up for it. People to see.
Yeah, do it. It was amazing. And it fought like a sea trout. It wouldn't stay down. And I've taken a couple of scales off the top, but they can't. I remember this happening before and taking scale samples of fish. If it's a regrowth on the scales or regeneration of scales, they can't be red. So there's no guarantee, but hopefully I'll get them red.
What was it caught on?
A buzzer. There was duck fly hatching, fish feeding in the hole. It was just after shower that we didn't think, first of all, it was going to come. And when it did come, we said it wasn't going to last, of which it did both. You're just in the middle of a really heavy shower. It took just after. And then, funnily enough, that shower killed the day. It absolutely just wiped the day. It got cold after that. That was at about, I don't know, was it 4 o'clock? And that's the problem of early season fishing. It just killed it. The temperature, that I'd say it dropped by around 2 degrees. And it just, oh, that was it. And you could feel it. And you know the haul you get on your breath?
Yeah.
Starting to notice that. And you're going, yeah.
It's still so changeable, isn't it? Like, it's just.
Oh, it really is.
And the sea trout, but you were saying, so the sea trout, it's only fourth you've ever caught in.
Fourth I've ever gotten, the biggest one that I've ever caught. Now, I've never had the other ones verified. First one I ever remember, funny enough, my mother caught it on the dap, and I had only been about 12, on a place here in South Lake, Carnarvon, off the Rulon Islands. She caught it on the dap, and I remember my father did a lot of sea trout fishing. He said, no, that's a sea trout. Got two others myself. One myself, then one we got one once, and we came in, well, threw back, and came in, said to somebody at the shoreline, said, we've got a sea trout. And they said, no, that wasn't a sea trout. They hadn't seen it. They just said, no, that wasn't a sea trout.
Oh, you're
so, you see, that's what that's what you're faced with. You know, some people would say, no.
Couldn't be.
You know, they don't come in. Yeah, so it'd be very interesting to see with this one. Hopefully the scales might show up something. See, but the pictures, the way it, like, it jumped about 10 to 12 times. Dang it. Exactly like a sea trout.
Can I ask you actually, just on the sea trout, because obviously Connemara, the West Coast, was known for its sea trout, but Carb was never known for that. Why is that?
Oh, never.
Why?
Well, because they didn't have to leave the lake. There's plenty of food in it.
Fair point.
There's plenty of food. You look at all the lakes that have good sea trout, or used to have good sea trout runs, they wouldn't be. Remember I told you once before here what Dr. Ken Whelan said about trout? Fat cattle, fat trout.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So you look at Carb, there's plenty of food in it, plenty of fat cattle on the eastern shore as well. And so there's no reason for the fish to live. But you look at the Connemara lakes.
Yes.
And they're acidic.
Sparse.
They're very poor in invertebrate life. They're on a granite or igneous bedrock. So the native fish in it are small, will never grow big. So, yeah, that's a very simplification of the whole thing.
Makes sense.
But, yeah, so.
And but, obviously a few get in. Are they lost?
Yeah, I don't know. And then this one, I don't know whether it was a slash or not. In Carnarvon, we have a couple of names, and we call, we don't use the word kelt, we use the word slash.
Just for sea trout.
No, for salmon
as well.
Or trout.
Yeah,
for something that has spawned, we'd say that it was a slash. So I don't actually imagine it's an Irish word, but so he looked to me like a kelt, sea trout kelt, because he wasn't that fat. Now, he wasn't in rank order, you know. So it looked to me like one that had spawned and was going to go back to sea. That's my impression, but was it? I don't know.
Amazing to think, isn't it? A few of them, isn't making it? Their way up.
Yeah.
And how long again did you say from the mouth of?
From where we caught them, is about 20 kilometers, I'd say, to the end of the lake. Might be even a bit more, because it was the end of the peninsula and the whole lake is nearly 40 kilometers long. So it might even be a bit more than that, because we're up at the top end.
Yeah.
And interesting enough, in that bay, I caught my only ever spring salmon on the lake. And right beside where that trout was caught, I caught a spring salmon once in April on a size 12 golden olive, and he had sea lice on him, and he's 9.5 pounds. That's my only spring salmon from the lake. In fact, my only ever spring salmon.
So were you shocked? Like, well, I suppose you saw it leaping and you kind of went, oh, that.
Yeah, we were both. What I thought then, I thought it was a small salmon slat that we'd hooked. I once got a I covered a fish once with buzzers that was rising in a slick, hooked into him, and he was a salmon kelt that would have been, when he was fresh, about 8 pounds, 7 or 8 pounds, and it was like an eel, but was feeding on duck flat. I got him on the buzzer. So that's what I thought. I thought it was, the way you get these really small grills. I thought that's what it was. But when you came in, you seen the picture, like it's
Yeah,
trout.
yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah, no, we'll put it up. People can have a look. It's amazing. The sea trout and carp as well.
Oh, that's it,
You
man.
never know what you get.
You never know. You just never know.
And so what's the, well, look, there's more crap weather coming.
Cancellations. Actually, to be honest with you, canceled Saturday. I was meant to go down to, remember, I was telling you I was meant to go down to Quran weekend.
Yes.
Give it a go. Yeah, no, canceled.
Just too bad.
Yeah, just it's too far. Monday might have been all right, but traveling down and everything. So
Yeah,
that's it. Are you
it's.
getting out for your any outing?
I'm hoping to get out this weekend. Probably just go local.
Yeah.
But again, it's just again more rain kind of
There's
forecast.
more
So,
rain. Yeah.
it's.
Actually, Neil was saying that about Quran. It's just like the amount of rain they've had,
That's just the
and they
worst.
need it more settled there.
Yeah, and the ground is
And
just
what's
so wet, like.
yeah. And what's the like the Blackwater must be?
Oh, it's way high. Yeah, no, I
Yeah.
wouldn't even think about it. Like, I'd probably go down to the shore, like, just for a bit of
Yeah.
trout fishing, like, but maybe just find one of the, I don't know, one of the smaller tributaries at
Yeah.
Aherlow or
That's it.
something. So, yeah, no, just do a bit of trout fishing, just probably, I'll have a look. But it's like, even Jesus, walking down, slopping through the fields
Slop,
and just,
yeah.
it's, oh, I tell you, just, it's as bad as people can remember in terms of,
It really is. Yeah,
you
it
know.
really
And
is.
every time I kind of go, okay, next week's, it's, we're in April now, like, it's going to end, like, it has to end.
On a side note, nothing to do with angling. This is the first year I haven't done any lambs. I've not got lambing. I'm so
Oh my
delighted
God.
that I
Yeah.
have no lambing this year because, oh, it's just like what we'd say around here, walking, it's like puttioch, which is puttioch is mud, right?
Okay, yeah.
Right? And just walking even down the fields, it's squelch, squelch, squelch. So I'm just absolutely delighted. Yeah, it is. It's horrid weather. The lake is still really high.
Yeah, no, it is. Like, and that's what I said, whatever about lakes, like for rivers, you know what I mean? It's
Yeah,
just.
whatever. Yeah.
I'll mention actually just, people probably heard it at the start of the podcast as well. It might be hard to believe with all the rain, with the weather, Mayfly season is a few weeks away. So
Yeah,
keep an ear
yeah.
out for the masterclass we are running with Jackie Mahon as well. It kind of keeps my hopes up in the sense of
Yeah.
it can't still be raining by Mayfly season,
Yeah.
can it?
Yeah.
No, it can't. It can't. It can't. It
Yeah.
won't. It won't.
Yeah.
It won't.
Yeah. Fingers crossed. That's all we can say.
So keep an eye out for that, folks. If you're interested in, we're doing that Mayfly Masterclass with Jackie Mahon in April 25th to get you set up for the Mayfly season. I'm kind of trying to think half full here, glass half full. There's
Yeah, that's
better
what we
days
got to do.
ahead. Better days ahead.
That's what we got to do.
This week's guest is Nicholas Grubb, who the Grubb family were well known down here in South Tipperary as commercial, I suppose, operations they had in terms of the mills. Really interesting
Right,
family
yeah.
going back hundreds of years. But the reason why we wanted to speak to Nicholas was he wrote an article for Sandwich Ireland, recently, well, probably a year or two ago, detailing why he thinks the problems are with the salmon, some controversial. Some thought-provoking, some different ideas there. Well, worth a read again, just to kind of get people's perspective on it. But I did want to speak to Nicholas as well because his great grandfather Samuel Grubb had caught supposedly a 62-pound salmon back in the day in
Yeah.
Ardfinnan, which is near me here, and in South Tipperary. So I just thought it'd be interesting to talk to him about that. But then also, obviously, he has a few ideas around the salmon and. Very much kind of a different take on things. So we thought, look, it'd be interesting to chat to him and hear what he had to say. But I first asked him about the 62-pounder that was caught by his great-grandfather, Samuel.
My mentor and instructor, the late great fisherman and sportsman Peter Butler. Peter always told me that on the fishing down at Rathagally, which was opposite Neddens, between Ardfinnan and Newcastle, there was a galvanized fishing hut there. I always remember it there. And on the wall of that was inscribed the record of the fish being caught, 62 pounds.
Wow.
And that's the only reason we reckon. And he caught one there, 62 pounds. But that would have been back in the 1890s, around that time, I believe.
Would have been close to a record.
Yeah, but not properly recorded. There was one recorded, I think, in the Knocklofty book, and I don't know what happened to that when everything busted up at Knocklofty House. Mm. There was one reported there. It's a very big fish, around 60 pounds.
Wow. It just shows you the size of the salmon that were around in the shore.
Yes, yes. And actually, a point I make in that piece I did, that opinion piece I did up for Salmon Watch Ireland, is part of the reason, or a main reason, why the shore 100 years ago was the premier big spring fish river in these islands, virtually. It had a massive reputation. And that was partially or largely caused by my ancestors and their like, who built weirs across the river. Mm. Okay. Now, why is that so important? And people haven't got this in their heads. To have a spring run, you're expecting, please the anglers, you're expecting big spring fish to come in the month of February, okay, and come up the river and take your fly or your bait or whatever, and then in the course of the summer, survive in the river all those months until it's time to spawn in the autumn. You cannot expect a fish to swim, 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 swim. You need dead water where they can go virtually dogger. And it's terribly, terribly important. And people have an idea that all weirs must be torn down. Now, concrete weirs, definitely. Big concrete weirs. I'd tear the Shannon scheme down tomorrow, the Cork and in the Shannon, Ballyshannon, along with them, for reasons we might get onto. But the low-level weirs of only a couple of meters height, they are vital for creating dead zones, very slow-flowing zones above them, where springfish can go doggo. Otherwise, you have a river like the Owen Duff up in Mayo, where you know the fish run in June or whatever, and or even later still with the Owen Moor or whatever. And you have a very, very short summer autumn season. And whereas with angling, we want to have this very prolonged season. So that gives you an idea, you know, that it's not a good idea to rush out and tear down all the weirs or other barriers, you know, to there being a bit of dead water.
I might just get onto the conservation of the salmon in a little bit, Nicholas.
Yep.
But I do want to stay with kind of just your kind of memories growing up. So it is fascinating. So it was Samuel, your great-grandfather. If that had been, like you said, if it had been recorded properly, that would have been the record fish, because the record fish for salmon for Ireland is 57 pounds, Michael Maher, up in Golden, which would have been further
yes,
upstream.
Yes, I saw that. That was reported in the Nationalist about a year ago, wasn't it?
That's right, yeah. And 18, sorry, I'm just double checking it here. 1874, it was a 57 pounder taken in 1874.
Yes.
So
yes.
But you're saying obviously Samuel Grubb would have been 60 pounds.
Yes, but dude, what scales did Samuel Grubb have them weighed on? Mm. And it wasn't verified. The fish caught in Clonmel or Knocklofty, I think was officially recorded, and so one's only making a presumption, you know, the truth was being told and the scales were accurate. One can say no more. One can't prove it.
And tell me this: yes. Growing up, was there was salmon fishing and salmon a big part of the household for you growing up as a child and for parents and grandparents?
My parents, no. My father did very little of it. My grandfather, Raymond, the old colonel, was a very, very keen fisherman. And he couldn't understand as things began to go to the wrong. And I remember the poor old fellow, he took me down in the mid-60s. He got out one of the old hardy split cane rods, about 17 or 18 foot long, And took me down to Rathagally, to Neddens, down below Ardfinnan, and started to fish the greased line. the greased line, it was called. Because in his days, of course, there was no modern floating line at all, or whatever. The line had to be greased. And so there was a big issue about it, and he couldn't understand why there were no fish. And already at that time, we'd moved into the era of the long lining and the Greenland netting. And very, very soon, you know, after that, literally, I remember I was sent away to school in England when I was 12, 13 years old. And I used to make my pocket money for the year. Every week, every day, when God gave the river without a flood, in the month of April, I'd be down in Ardfinnan or down the river there fishing. And then when I caught a fish, my mother would very kindly bring me in the evening into the likes of the Manila Hotel or someplace there, like that. And the fish, it was 10 shillings a pound. 10 shillings wow. a pound. But then suddenly, I think about 1968, 67 or 68, all went upside down. And we had the first major return of the diseased fish. Now, if I can explain, because I'm the only fellow who's going to tell you this, why did we suddenly have a whole pile of diseased fish and the whole stock half destroyed? The answer to that is quite simple. That was the start of the monofilament fisheries getting going off Greenland and off the Faroes and all those areas. And what happens when you fish monofilament? You have a net a certain size, and you will have all the time fish escaping, half escaping, getting those features of their lips, either side of their mouth, horn, or big hairs along their dorsal fin or whatever. And suddenly you had an enormous number of wounded fish who had no means, they hadn't developed the means of dealing with such a lot of wounding. And the wounds got infected with the UDN fungus, and then when they hit the fresh water, it just went wild. And that all happened about 1967, 68 is when that happened.
Could you remember, like, or take us back to what it was like then, Nicholas, just in terms of the amount of fish in the river? Like, do you remember, like, as a boy?
Oh, Jesus, the amount of fish in the River Tar. No one fished for salmon in the River Tar. No one would bother. The serious people fished down on the river shore where there was more room and there was some bigger fish or anything like that. But by God, when it came to the time in the autumn, they were crawling over each other's backs. There were thousands and thousands of fish going up the rivers. Absolutely amazing. Back in the 50s, the Irish rivers were absolutely teeming with them. Here on the River Blackwater, there's a lot of records. And here in the fishery, the Blackwater's commercial fishery, because Barbara's people had about a third of it, of the rights. 100 years ago, there would have been 250,000 fish being caught on the Blackwater commercial fishery. 250,000. And then they suddenly became very valuable in the 1860s. And why was that? And the reason for that was the coming of the railway. Because then what would happen is if they were got from the quay here in Villierstown, near us here, at Dromana, where I am now, they could be got from the quay in Villierstown up to the station in Caer to meet the evening train coming from the west, from Mallow direction. All the salmon were put on the train, and they were then in the fish market in Billingsgate in London the next morning at 11 o'clock, and they were worth money. If that wasn't for that, they weren't worth pig feed. And so it was a massively valuable, you know, it's just absolutely terrible what's actually happened to it. I mean, the stock are reduced a lot now. This last year, I think there were about 2,500 caught, which would be what would be 1% of what there was then 100 years ago. And so it's all pretty sad, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a very sad picture, and it's one, unfortunately, that seems to be resonant throughout the country. Nicholas, just wanted to ask you there after your brilliant introduction from Peter Butler into fishing. Did you carry on fishing much after after you?
I did a fair amount. I got so tied up, you know. I was one of the first people into the limousine breed, and then Barbara and I then ran the breed society for years and years and years, and then I was tied up in the Cattle Breeding Federation, and so I didn't have a lot of time. But I got fishing when I could, and I wanted just to tell you, which I sort of slightly forewarned Dara on, of an amusing incident back the way. It was on the occasion of when Barbara, it was Barbara's birthday, and the father-in-law got a bye-day at the prestigious Caresville fishery. You'd have heard about it, up at Tonland, below Fermoy. And he got a bye-day of a Sunday. This is back to 20, 25, 30 years ago now. And so along we went, Barbara and myself, and we had our boy Alexander. He was about age eight, and we had a French boy over who was doing something riding pony clubbing or something. He was aged eight. The two boys had never caught a fish, and neither had the two women ever caught a fish. And so the night before, I dug out my old spinning rods, a couple of old spinning rods and netters and things like that. And I had to set up for the two boys, and I had an old trout fly rod, a single-handed fly rod, and I borrowed a left-handed digital reel off the father-in-law because I couldn't find the rest of my tackle, and set that up for what Peter Butler used to call a beta worm. And I went out the night before with a flashlight and got a few dozen worms. And so I was left to mind the two boys at Caresville, and the father-in-law took the women down the river to his favourite spot, and they never having caught a fish, it was vital then that they would catch a fish. And so anyhow, by the time we were to finish in the evening, the boys had lost every mess I had and wrecked my tackle and all the rest of it. Alexander, having never caught a fish before, had three peel on the bank. The French boy, never having caught a fish before, had two peel on the bank. And I, having not fished the beta worms since I was 16, had five on the bank, and I was banned here for years after that. So the father-in-law and the women came back up and they had nothing, and so there was one of my most amusing times in angling. But I had all sorts of amazing things, like when Peter and I. He sculled the boat up from Ballynacane up to Castle Brace. And I don't know how many peel we got. You know, the flood had come in the middle of July or sometime like that, and throwing a little, you know. But the fishing I actually enjoyed most was the father-in-law used to go with Pat Martin, a PDM. Pat used to take the Sheehan fishing up in Mayo on the Owen Duff, Sheehan Lodge on the Owen Duff for a week. In June each year for a long time, and I was invited up as well. And I loved that fishing because it was very, very good fishing. And when actually there, one just fished single-handed with fly only, single-handed rod. But I preferred to fish the single-handed rod fly. And I killed a lot of fish there on that. That was the nicest fishing I reckon I ever did.
There was also a lot of problems. You know, in the decades that followed as well, Nicholas.
I saw it all happening, everything happening. My active life has covered the whole period of demise. Now, back in the days before rural electrification, those people who had no land, they heated and cooked on what were called sticks. Now, what were sticks? Sticks were timber, usually alder and willow, that they were allowed by tradition to harvest along the banks of all the small rivers and streams, okay? Mm-hmm. They were allowed to travel the streams. There was a sort of right of way. And so in the summer evening, they would hit out with the bushman boat saw, and along they'd go along the streams with a leather patch on their shoulder, and they'd cut six or eight or whatever, long 8-foot poles of these willows and whatever, bring them back home and stand them against the dry gable end. And then after church on Sunday, after Mass on Sunday, they'd cut them up into firing, okay? And that's how they heated their houses and cooked their meals up until 1955, when we had rural electrification across most of the country, certainly down Tipperary area, down the southeast. And so suddenly you had these people stopping doing that. And suddenly all that pressure was taken off and you had trees growing everywhere suddenly. And so you had trees growing on the banks of the rivers and you had trees growing all around the land. You go back to photographs of the 1920s and 30s in the National Library or wherever, and there is hardly a tree to be seen except on these walled-in virtually states of the wicked landlords. And so you had a massive change in the ecosystem. Now, what happened then, because it all will be quite clear to see, what happened then was Peter Butler and I and all the people up and down the River Tyre and along South Tipperary there wondered why all the weed, the ranunculus weed, the keystone aquatic species, why that was dying in our rivers, okay? The rivers were being shaded out. And so the ranunculus was no longer getting the light and was dying and was no longer there, still filtering out, grabbing all the fine silts and separating the sands from the gravel and giving clean spawning gravel cover for all the small fish. And if you put a bit of it across your knee, as I often did, it would be full of freshwater shrimp, caddis larvae, something else and something else, all of which provided the feed for all the fish as they grew. And that has been the mega, mega disaster in our rivers, the shading out of the keystone aquatic species of the river, namely the ranunculus weed. And people don't seem to understand that. So that, I think, will explain to you where things have gone wrong. An average river like the Shore would have 1,000 kilometres of spawning and rearing stream. But now, of course, they're all completely sterile and useless because they're overshadowed and we've got to let the light back in. They need to be about 60% open.
In many ways, I love hearing the stories of the heyday. But it's also very depressing because you realize, you know, and there's a good figure, I think, like you said, if you take the Blackwater, the commercial fishery, from 250,000 in the 19th century to 2,500 down to 1% of what it was. So that
terrible,
kind of sums,
isn't it? Terrible.
That sums it up. It sums it up.
Yes. Also, yeah. Yeah.
Also brilliant to hear the memories about Samuel Grubb and the potential record salmon. You know, like in fairness, it's amazing just to hear those stories. And really, that's why I wanted to catch up with you, to get those stories, to get your thoughts. I know you've a big interest in salmon conservation. Some really interesting ideas there, I'm sure, that will have people thinking and talking and to spur debate, if nothing less. So I just want to thank you for your time this evening, and I'll keep an eye out for future articles maybe from Salmon Watch Ireland.
Yes, I think they probably had enough of me. Anyhow, gentlemen, many thanks for having me on, and can I wish you all the best and good night.
Our thanks to Nicholas Grubb for joining us on the show. Don't forget to rate, review and follow the Ireland on the Fly podcast on Apple, Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Plus, you can keep up to date on IrelandOnTheFly.com as well as on Instagram, and myself and Tom will be back with another episode about the people and places of fly fishing in Ireland.